Radiotopia.
I'm excited to tell you that one of our favorite Radiotopia siblings, Ear Hustle, is back with a new season. Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast. Co-hosts Nigel Poor and Erlon Woods have recently been spending time at four California prisons and have a season's worth of funny, surprising, and unforgettable stories to share. In a recent episode, they were able to visit a groundbreaking prison hospice where they spoke to men who are grappling with the reality of dying inside prison. Also coming up this season are stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells, complicated mom-daughter relationships in prison, and incarcerated people who wonder whether they've become too comfortable behind bars. Stories about life on the inside, told by those who live it. Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, my name is Rachel, and as a child and a young teenager, I was a hopeless romantic to the max.
At age 15, Rachel Cooper found herself in an undeniably romantic situation.
While I was in North Carolina on vacation, I did fall in love with a boy, and we shared a sweet kiss by the lake. And from that moment on, I was counting down the days until I returned to North Carolina. And so for an entire year, I just pined over this boy, and I wrote about him literally every day.
From PRX and Radiotopia, I'm Neil, and this is Mortified. Today on the show, tales of teenagers ripped away from their supposed soulmates, left to daydream about the day they might finally get back together. Once again, Rachel.
So, Sunday, February 13th, 1994. Today should always be an important day in my life. For a year ago today, my lips lost their virginity. It was Saturday, February 13th, 1993. Sunday, April 10th, 1994. I am so unbelievably happy. I talked to Emily tonight, and she saw Danny. So Emily was my cousin, and she went to North Carolina with me every year. She tried to get a picture of him as he was driving, but she's not sure it will turn out. But she did get me a picture of his little white car. I can't wait till she gets it developed. I feel that from now on, I can find it in myself to be happy always, just knowing that she saw him. When I get those pictures, I'm going to frame them, no matter how bad they are. Even if I can't see him, I'll know he's there. I shall never be depressed again. I am so divinely happy. I feel like I could run through the crowded halls at school tomorrow singing. I'm going to have such sweet dreams tonight. And guess what I'll be dreaming about? Danny. Okay. Thursday, April 21st, 1994. I'm going to be 16 tomorrow. I can hardly believe it. I wrote a letter tonight to Vice President Gore about the gorillas. And how soon they are going to be extinct. I was talking to Emily, and we were both crying, so we decided to each write a letter. Tomorrow is also Earth Day. It's kind of neat to have Earth Day on my birthday. My 15th year of life is soon to be over, and I can never go back. Good night. For my last night of ever being the age of 15. Sunday, April 24th, 1994. I finally got the pictures I've been waiting for. 2 weeks of agony waiting to see my beloved's car. I And all you can see is a white dot. But I am not complaining, for it is Danny's little white car. Now my room is filled with his presents. I can't wait to see Danny again. Tuesday, April 26, 1994. Sean and Ryan had sex 4 times. I hope she doesn't get pregnant. I can't believe how many times she has had sex. I can't imagine having sex. Actually. At times I do. If Danny and I get back together, I can imagine making love to him in the moonlight. It's weird to think that I'll be reading back on this someday, and I will have already lost my virginity. But now I have no idea when, where, or with who. I wonder if this time next year I will know all of the answers. Tomorrow I am finally going to get my driver's permit. I read the book. I will die if I flunk. Thursday, April 28th, 1994. I went to get my permit yesterday, but I flunked. Naturally. Thursday, May 5th, 1994. 23 more days till school is out. I think of how happy I will be just to see Danny. That will make this whole year worth it. To see his smile shining, his perfect white teeth, and his eyes so bright and deep, and of course, his bare feet. No one could ever possibly know how much I like this guy from Atlanta, Georgia. 17, who doesn't like rap, loves to lick. Drives a little white car and once told me I was pretty. How much he has affected me. I am crazy about him and I hardly knew him. I think of him night and day and I hardly knew him. I want him more than anything, and I hardly knew him. Monday, May 23rd, 1994. Natalie and I went to the park tonight, and the funniest thing happened. And it's kind of funny because Natalie's here. This guy came over and he wanted our numbers. It was pretty nice. But I'm not very attracted to guys that are very desperate and throw themselves at you. I don't like pitiful guys. Thursday, May 26, 1994. I am so excited to see Jennifer. She lost her virginity on April 2nd to Ben. Every one of my friends is losing their innocence. She has had sex with him 7 times. That beats Sean's count of 5 and Claire's 1. Monday, May 30th, 1994. Last night was the craziest night of my life. We went to this pool hall and we got a lot of attention right away. We played pool with these 2 guys, Phil and Scott. We were pretty much surrounded by guys. We couldn't stay out that late because I told my mom we wouldn't. I was very lucky because they could have raped and killed us. I can't wait to go back again. Sunday, June 5th, 1994. We found out that Claire and Adam had sex for the fourth time on Natalie's hallway floor. Do you remember that, Natalie? Natalie was pretty upset about that. I would be too if someone had sex on my floor. Monday, June 6, 1994. I got my license today. Just barely, though. The guy said that I drove way too slow, which was very true. That was only because I didn't want to go too fast, but I went really slow. Tuesday, June 7, 1994. There's something very strange about me that I've always been aware of. I don't think that my state of mind is anywhere close to anyone else's. I think too much. I never stop thinking. When people are trying to have a conversation with me, my eyes seem to glaze over, and I am not there anymore. I am on a mountain in a field of wildflowers. I am by the ocean splashing my feet in the water. I am helping sick children. I am sitting by a river with a flower in my hair, a child on my lap, and the man I love sitting next to me. Okay. Monday, June. Monday, June 13th, 1994. So this is just a week later. Just take note of that. Today was terrible. I got my first speeding ticket. I was driving home from Natalie's, and a cop came out of nowhere. I was going 32 miles per hour in a 20 mile per hour zone. I tried to play sensitive, and I even cried, but the asshole still gave me a ticket. Thursday, June 16th, 1994. Sean and Ryan have done it 11 times. And Claire and Adam have 7. Every time they are together, they end up having sex. And the places they have it. Last night, it was Adam's basement while his parents were awake upstairs. I could never do that while anyone was in the same house. Thursday, June 23rd, 1994. Another day thinking about Danny, and only Danny. I can just imagine seeing him again for the first time in a year. I believe I will faint at that moment. Friday, July 22nd, 1994. It has finally come, the day I have longed for, and I'm scared to death. I can't believe I'm actually going back to the mountains where I belong. Please, Danny, remember me. That is all I ask of you. I have wished on a star every night. I can't imagine seeing him again with his bare feet, his his hat backwards, his sparkling eyes, and his beautiful smile. The day has come to know how my love story shall end. Lake Junaluska, Saturday, July 23rd, 1994. I have finally come back to my darling home by the lake. As we pulled into Junaluska, I felt tears forming in my eyes as I grasped Emily's arm. It is so weird to flip back to the first pages of this journal and read about how badly I wish that I were here, and now I am, standing on the bridge over the shining waters. I found the little bottle that I left last year with the gum that I had in my mouth the first time I kissed him. This year, I will not leave it here. Oh, I am so happy. I love it here more than any other place I have ever known. I can't believe I am here. Monday, August 1st, 1994. My heart has been ripped in two tonight. I came to find out that my distant love ended up moving back to Atlanta, Georgia. When I heard, I felt my legs go weak, and I thought that they would give out on me at any moment. I spent a whole year dreaming and wishing, and now it's all over. This isn't supposed to happen. I was supposed to come back, and he was going to be waiting for me. We were going to fall in love and take peaceful walks hand in hand across the bridge. I was supposed to be happy again. All those times I imagined him standing at the youth center or walking across the bridge. He wasn't even here. He was back in Atlanta. Nothing ever works out for me. I will never look at the bridge or the lake without thinking about Danny. I will always remember him with his hat backwards, his bare feet. And his little white car. I can't believe it's actually over. My story is over. I am too late. My love is gone. Wednesday, August 3rd, 1994. Two nights after my last entry. Tonight was so exciting. We got picked up by some guys in a red car. But that was just the beginning. Joshua came over. I failed to write about him before, but I met him last night, and he is unbelievably good looking. In a couple of minutes, more guys came around, and two of them asked for my address. Joshua was behind me, talking to some other people. Then I felt his fingers run through my hair. I had to hold myself back from turning around and kissing his sweet lips. He looked at my face and touched the sides of my head and smiled and said, "Perfect." I have never met anyone like him. Thank you.
That was Rachel Cooper at a Mortified event in Denver at the Oriental Theater.
Do you like the stories you hear on the Mortified podcast? See it live. We've got upcoming shows in cities across the country. This week, you can catch us in Baltimore and Los Angeles. This spring, you can catch events in Portland, San Francisco, Oakland, Austin, Chicago, Brooklyn, DC, and more. Get your tickets at getmortified.com.
Howdy. Molly and I became friends in junior high growing up in New Haven, Connecticut. She was the first person I ever went out with in eighth grade, which mostly meant holding hands while watching film strips. But after a few weeks, she broke up with me using an Annie Hall quote. She said, "A relationship is like a shark. It has to keep moving forward or it dies. And what we have here is a dead shark."
That's Adam Rubin, who, as a side note for any Mortified superfans, is not the same Adam Rubin heard in episode 6, reading poetry with memorable lines like,
"When a moose ceases to be a moose, it begins to be a woman."
Indeed, this Adam Rubin didn't have time to write poetry in high school because he was far too busy writing journal entries about his first breakup. And he shared those entries with us on stage in Baltimore.
So we remained good friends, but she started dating Jeff soon after. And Molly and Jeff dated all throughout high school while I was eager to find a girlfriend. And Molly was my best friend, so she was the person I confided in most. November 8th, 1987 is our senior year of high school. I talked to Molly until 1:30 a.m. about our old favorite topic, the kiss. She wants me to initiate it, but doesn't believe I really will. I want to kiss her, though I'm not quite sure why exactly, and I'll do it eventually. I definitely don't want to leave high school without having done this. So this was a topic that Molly had started talking about a couple of years earlier, that when we dated in eighth grade, we never actually kissed, and wouldn't it be an interesting experiment just to see what that would be like? Molly was attractive, and I loved her as a friend, but she'd been dating Jeff for years, and it was just hard to think of her in any other way. Plus, Jeff was a good friend, too. So I kept us in the most G-rated will they or won't they for a pathetically long time. A few days later, a minor injustice happened to us as part of the school newspaper staff, and we were distraught. November 13th. Molly and I were really mad and upset. She asked me to hug her. I did so comfortingly. And as she finished, she kissed me on the cheek. I'm fairly sure she wanted me to kiss her, but I just couldn't because I feel it would be wrong using this newspaper thing as an excuse to do so. December 3rd, a thought on the babe situation. In a recent phone conversation, Molly asked me if I wanted a girlfriend. I told her that I wasn't actively searching for one, but if the opportunity presented itself, I'd accept. December 10th, early college acceptances were arriving. Molly and Jeff got deferred. I find this simply unbelievable. Molly is witty, intelligent, brilliant. I don't understand how they could pass her up. And Jeff is pretty similar. January 24th, 1988. I had an Esquire night with Molly last night. So this is when we would sit around in the basement reading my dad's Esquire magazine, teetering between irony and trying to figure out how to be some version of cool. In fact, I started keeping this journal because our favorite Esquire columnist, Bob Green, published his journal from his senior year of high school. And so I thought I should keep a journal too, and eventually it would be published, or whatever this is. Molly said she had new worries about the kiss, that she wanted to too much. I don't understand yet. Later on, she said, even though I've said it to some random people in our class too, I really mean it. I love you. I said, sort of automatically, kind of in shock, I love you too. And as I said it, I realized that I really do love her, whether we're going out or just being friends or whatever. So as prom approached, I found myself suddenly to be a very eligible bachelor among the girls in our friend group. April 14th. Today I was talking to Becca at school. She says, some people say I'm incapable of being subtle. Then she kind of grabs me and kisses me. It seemed like a little peck on the lips, but it lasted for a minute. I couldn't fucking believe it. We're standing right there in the middle of the hallway. I keep thinking of it and letting out little involuntary exclamations and whistles. April 23rd. Today, Molly said, with Becca, Ellie, and Sasha liking me to various degrees, my ego must be taking a sky ride. Why did it take until the last week of April of my senior year before I became such a great catch? Couldn't this have happened like a year earlier? So I ended up dating Becca, who was Molly's close friend. May 26th, I had a long talk with Molly about a week ago till early in the morning. Naturally, she asked me every detail about my relationship with Becca. Naturally, I told her everything. We revived the old tradition of talking about the kiss. She asked me if I'd sleep with Becca, and I said no. We were talking about how she hasn't slept with Jeff, and she said that in a strange way, it would be awesome to sleep with me, like as friends. I knew just what she meant, though I recognized that in 30 years, reading that will make no sense. She said, I don't know how I'd be in bed, and I certainly don't know how you'd be in bed, but I have a feeling that together we would be awesome in bed. June 15th. As she was leaving the party, Molly said there was something she wanted to ask me in the other room. Adam, are you in love with me? I said, yes. And because more explanation seemed to be required, I said I felt that I could count on her in case of some tragedy, but it was all more deep and sensitive than it comes across here. She said she loved me too, and it was a very nice, happy conversation. When we returned, Jeff made jokes about my wiping off lipstick. So I never spoke to Becca again after prom night, and I left to be a camp counselor for the summer. June 29th, I received an 8-page letter from Molly. It covered lots of things and blew my mind. Molly explained to me how Jeff wanted to sleep with her, and while she wanted to sleep with him, she also didn't, and she wasn't quite sure why or what to do, but some of it had to do with me. She said she was glad she told me she loved me. Then she adds how she keeps thinking about how she wants to write me sonnets and read Esquires with me and kiss me with heretofore unseen passion. Oh, man! No one ever wanted to write me sonnets before. I guess I've always sort of held my love for her in check, keeping it friendly love to keep from being hurt by or jealous of Jeff. I assumed she did the same, but she actually loves me. Yeah! July 8th, a week later. I stayed up late to finish my reply to Molly. I said that I keep her relationship with Jeff separate from ours, but I sometimes don't say things or think things because of Jeff, like it would be inappropriate. August 5th, Molly wrote me that we wouldn't be able to stop after a kiss, like stop a relationship. She said that it seems like a logical step in a capital R relationship, or at least a meaningful fling that is looming on the horizon. On one hand, I was shocked. On the other hand, I'm surprised I didn't see this coming earlier. What with all the hints it now seems she's been dropping. The idea of a relationship excites and scares me. I still want a relationship. I'm not sure why I'm apprehensive about it when she makes me so happy. Just a note. At 2:22 p.m. or 3:33 or 4:44 when you make a wish, I've started wishing I could go out with Molly. August 10th. Notes on the libidinous read horny teenager. I am one. I read a column about a guy's first time, which discussed the peer pressure a guy experiences to get losing it over with and get on to less pressured times. What am I waiting for? I had a willing partner in Becca. What stopped me other than parental and societal morals? What is there to be ready for? And why will sex ruin a relationship? When will sex make you never want to see someone again? And when can you have a fling with great sex? Can nice boys like me, the kind who always get caught the only time they ever break a rule, have meaningless fun flings? What is morally wrong with a fun fling with good sex? And what about the price of tea in China? So camp ended and I came home briefly before leaving to start college. August 24th, Molly came over and we read Esquires and it was fun, like old times. I don't like thinking about going out with her. I'm hesitant to ruin our friendship and fun with the logistics that seem to come with going out, worrying about impressions and feeling that I have to say the right thing or that I can't tell her everything. So college started, and of course we were all absorbed in our own new worlds. Molly and I went to different colleges, and we talked occasionally, and it was awkward for a while, but as long as we didn't talk about dating each other, we could gradually get back to just being buddies. We stayed friends all throughout college. In fact, we're still good friends today. And then the summer before senior year of college, on the night of my 21st birthday, shit got real. I was working at camp again, and Molly came up to visit. She wrote me a sonnet, which began, "Forsooth, 1 in 20 years thou dost glean. For seven do our souls mesh and quicken. 'Twill endure tumult and loss of Bob Green and abundance of our being chicken. And this is what I wrote that night. We looked at the infinite stars and talked for a while. Eventually, she asked if she could kiss me. I'd thought of that this afternoon, but I didn't think she still really wanted to, or that I'd have the courage to ask. I said yes. We talked about it for a few minutes and kept reminding each other of all the times we've discussed this. I couldn't bring myself to just lean over and do it, but as always, she made it easy. She said, "We'll start small and see how it goes." She kissed me on the cheek, and then we leaned close and kissed. It was indescribable. It was wonderful. It was sublime. I was acutely aware of her touch on the nape of my neck, on my cheek, on my ear. We brushed noses. Our lips and tongues touched delicately and explored as gently as I can imagine. As cliched as it sounds, her touch was electric. Everywhere I felt contact, her skin seemed to glow as if charges leapt between us. And eventually we stopped and held each other, and I told her that I loved her. I feel in some sense that my life has changed, though I don't know how. This was a truly momentous occasion, simultaneously the end of an era and the start of a wonderful part of my life. 2 days that I had been anticipating forever finally arrived, and they coincided. My 21st birthday and a moment of true physical intimacy I had only imagined. Tonight, Molly gave me a sonnet, and I knew bliss. If I should be so blessed and fortunate to live my life as I feel now and surrounded by such people, truly, I could ask no more. Thank you.
That was Adam B. Rubin at a Mortified event in Baltimore. And this concludes our look at the ways teenagers attempt to rekindle their old flames, where we learned love isn't the only thing in life filled with unexpected twists and turns.
I went to get my permit yesterday, but I flunked. Naturally.
Everything shared in today's show was true. No embellishing, no exaggerating, just God-given awkwardness. And did you know we make stuff other than this podcast? We do. Visit GetMortified.com to get your hands on great Mortified gifts, including our 3 books, official Mortified t-shirts, or even our super fun party game, I Can't Believe I Did That, where you get to prompt friends to share their own childhood stories. And if you've got kids ages 9 to 13, check out our hilarious and educational podcast made just for tweens called Ooh, You're in Trouble, a storytelling show that's as fun to say as it is to hear. And for companies wishing to reach kajillions of listeners with just remarkable taste, email sponsor@radiotopia.fm. This series is a team effort, and our podcast production team for this episode includes Hadley Dion, Dave Nadelberg, and myself, Neil Catcher. Some of the material featured in this episode was produced for the stage by David Blatt and Aaron Drew, who are two of the many amazing producers whose work make this stage show possible. End credit music by Snake Snake Snakes. This has been a Mortified Media production for Radiotopia, a network from PRX. Till next time, we remind you that we are freaks, we are fragile, and we all survived.